Welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Cook, and I am joined by one person and one person only. We've had a few of these recently, and I guess you, listener, are sat there on your morning walk or afternoon run and you're thinking, who is it this week? Is it Adam Carroll? It's not Adam Carroll. Is it Nicola? Nope. It's Christopher White. How are you, Chris? All right?
I'm good, man. I hope that for those listening, they're not disappointed because they're expecting someone else. So I'd just like to
not
say,
a chance.
Sorry, guys, but you're stuck with me.
Not a chance, mate. People will be absolutely delighted to hear your wonderful voice. I have noticed, you haven't noticed that I am now calling you Christopher.
Yeah, do you know what? I don't mind. My mum calls me Christopher. That's it. Even okay, my wife, when she's pissed with me, doesn't.
So really?
I'm quite happy. She just calls me Knobhead or someone like that.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to, off the podcast, the only time I hear my name is when people are angry at me. I mean, I have nicknames and all sorts. But we're not going to get into what my nickname is because I will never tell. Do you have a nickname, Chris, outside of the site?
Yeah, but it's just an obvious one. It's like, it's Whitey.
It's Whitey. Of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Which has got me in trouble before just because of my nickname. As you can imagine, there's a race thing there. Some people are a bit stupid. You just add a Y on the end of your last name, don't you? For a lot of people,
it's the football
Smithy
football thing,
Y.
Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, hey, interesting one for you that my son. I've always hated the sort of the nickname Cookie. I've always hated that and Cookie Monster. But my eldest absolutely embraces it. But interestingly, they say it Cookie is COOKIE. Which it does actually look right. It looks really wrong just putting a Y on the end of my name.
Yeah, yeah. But I instantly thought it should have a Y on the end.
Yeah, no, but it
does look odd.
It does. But people aren't here for our absolutely lightning quick wit about nicknames and surnames.
No.
They're here to talk about the Heat, Need for Speed Heat, because that's out now.
Yeah.
I don't know, I feel a bit like it's been sent to die because it sort of showed up and it was on EA Access and, you know, reviews are up on release day, proper release day, and it just sort of is. And I wonder if that's because it's a week before Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, or maybe not, I don't know. But I've played a bit of Need for Speed Heat, you've reviewed it, 7.5 out of 10.
Yes.
I did want to talk about something. I was quite shocked in the opening of the game at the story. I'm really surprised that that kind of story or that attempt at that kind of story is in a game of this nature.
Yes.
So, like, for people who don't know, it's the opening cutscene essentially is that one of the main character's crew essentially is bullied by the police. And that's not really strong enough. Like, they catch up with this guy. And it's a street race, you know, it's the kind of Fast and Furious style street racing stuff. Well, it's the Need for Speed street racing stuff. And they essentially, there's three police officers, two men and one woman. And the guy who's like the big bad of like, I'm going to stop these illegal, illicit street racers, essentially says, shut the cameras off, I'm going to shoot him. Like someone says, oh, you know, shame he didn't. Sound like a shame he didn't go over with his car. And he goes, well, does anyone need to know? And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Now, I'm obviously social commentary in games isn't a new thing, but it certainly surprised me in a game of this, you know, a big budget EA published game that they were allowed to put it in there because, like, the lieutenant literally goes and turns the cameras off and goes to get his gun until the female police officer was like, are we really going to do this? And there's other stuff later on where it seems like the police are just like dirty cops. Like there's, and I was just really surprised to see it, and in a good way.
Yeah,
in a good way. But I suspect they get close to saying something but never do.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the case. They don't like fully go on and address it, I guess. But
it becomes an open world game, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Like even later on, there's other aspects of that, and as I say, I don't want to ruin the story, even though the story is not particularly fantastic. But in terms of the social commentary stuff, that exists quite a bit, and yeah, it's quite brutal. But I mean, a lot of the game is that whole generic kind of Fast and Furious language, a narrative. Mm. These guys, you get to pick an avatar of about 10 or 15 people, and you're new to Palm City. Fantastic name.
Yeah, Palm City is a choice, isn't it?
Yeah, a haven for masturbation. But you play as an unnamed character, which you can change their clothes and that throughout the game. That's like a nice little side thing to the customization. But you are trying to make a name for yourself in this city by taking part in races of all kinds. Now, the best kind of feature is the day and night system. So it's not a 24-hour cycle anymore. However, when you leave your garage, you can choose to go out and race in the daytime or the night. So in the day, you have sanctioned races on cordoned off courses, and you can win a lot of money by finishing first within the races. You can finish down the chain, but obviously you don't get enough bank, as they call it, which kind of sounds stupid, but bank is money. So you earn your bank on these courses, and you can go and buy a multitude of things, whether that's new exhaust, new engine, new kind of, there are things you can buy later on which help you kind of stop the police from interfering, or like there's a whole manner of upgrades there. You can upgrade the suspension and the clutch, all the kind of normal things. However, it just feels a bit more streamlined in a sense, where you don't have to know a lot about racing or how cars work to kind of get into it. It is more arcadey than Sim, which is great. So that's kind of the daytime. I suppose before we move on, there are also things like that make it feel more like Burnout Paradise, in the sense there's like billboards you have to crash through, which earn you a bit of money. There's certain like jumps you can try and like beat the target length. So if you get a certain amount of feet more, then you earn some money.
It is kind of trying to, I mean, I even think with Palm City, they're going for like P City, Paradise City.
Yes.
They are definitely trying to go for the Burnout Paradise. I think Forza Horizon 4 did better.
Well, oh, yeah. 3.
But, you know, like you say, with the billboards and stuff, it's very, but I don't know. There's a running theory of mine is that games like this aren't inherently bad, but the problem they've got is that when you try to go for realistic looking cars, you are bound by, even if you're doing arcade races, you are bound by laws of physics.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I know the drifting in this is pretty cool and it's easy, but Forza Horizon 4 somehow didn't do this, but I think that's because they then didn't really try for the story as much. There's a story, but it's not kind of trying to be edgy and cool. It's just like same as Forza Horizon 3, and is a new place to go and do Forza-y things.
Yeah, absolutely. I
mean, it's like, it looks good and it runs well. What I've played of it, not as much as you, obviously, but I don't know. I'd love to see, you know, I mean, something like a Wreckfest where it just goes, yeah, these are cars, but also just smash the fuck out of them.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't that. They've got, you know, proper cars, licensed cars, I think. And
Yeah.
I don't know. I just... Something feels, I don't know, off about the whole thing. And I can't quite put my finger on what it is, you know?
No, I kind of enjoy the simplicity of it, where, like, you've got these races and you win to earn money, and then you can go and spend stuff and buy new cars and that. And the nighttime is obviously really cool, because that's when
the illicit
street races happen, and you know you can spend as much time as you want at night taking part in different races, but the more races you take part in, the more the police are aware, and that's kind of how the story filters into the game, is where that you will see, I mean, cops do drive around in the day, but there's less chance. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've just finished a race and a cop car drove into me, and then that set off a chase. But that was like a random event. It doesn't happen it's not happened any other time for me. Whereas at night, you know, you could alert a cop and then you're sat on this high speed pursuit through the city, and you can have others filter into you. So, like, I mean, there were times where I was having six police cars on me.
It's kind of like the GTA sort of star system, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very much
so. It's also like another game, which I'm not going to... I'm not going to take that. You can have that. But it, yeah. What I was going to ask is, like, the thing I struggled with a bit at night is that, obviously, and you mentioned the colour, it is a good-looking game. Driving games tend to be. But at night, it's very much like the hues of neon, the pinks and the blues. And I struggled with the combination of pace and that visual aesthetic, because I'm getting on a bit and, like, my eyes, I was like, am I tired? What is this? I found my reactions were slower. But I need to play a bit more of it, you know.
Yeah. I think it takes a while to get the balance right, but when you are upgrading your car and you're improving the drift or whatever, the power of the engine or the control, you take those corners a lot easier. And
right,
with racing games, whatever racing game you play, you very rarely look outside of the... There's like one point you kind of focus on in the distance, like in real driving, where you're looking what's coming ahead of you. So you get very much used to how to go into the corners and how to drift, which does become a lot easier with the better car you have. So it does improve, and then that's when the races become a lot more fun, because each race is kind of tied to a level, and the more stuff you kind of upgrade that gives you a better car, the better, I suppose, it's a rating your car will have. So I think you start off at 120 with one of your starter cars. I picked the Ford Mustang 65, and so you put a better exhaust in, that level will go to like 128, and then you put a better suspension in, or a suspension that fits your style, it could go to 135, and gradually keeps climbing. And then the more you play through, the harder the races get. But you can still go and do the 120 races that you started off doing. You just won't earn as much. But you can definitely see an improvement in your ability when you upgrade your car. And that's another cool thing about it, is how you upgrade your car. So you can, also you can buy a lot of cars, so you can adjust them all, fine-tune them differently. But obviously there's off-road racing, there's on the tarmac, there's... all variables in the different races, so you can fine tune your car to be good off road, and also have decent drift mechanics. Or if you want to focus more on the grip and the on road, you can add different types of exhausts or different types of parts to kind of change how you want your car to run. So there's a lot of playing around with the different items, and also obviously there's no loot boxes. They've made that quite clear. And the parts aren't ridiculously expensive either, which is also very good, because, yeah, there are no loot boxes, but if it's too expensive, then it'll take too long to grind. There isn't a real feeling of grinding in this. You don't have to spend a lot of time retreading old steps, which is good, really.
I think one of the mistakes it makes a little bit early on is that, like, it's like I say, I don't know if the people making it would be offended or proud that I'm seeing the link, but it definitely is an attempt at a kind of Burnout Paradise game here. And, well, I think so anyway.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
But the thing that sort of gets wrong is that at the start of this game, you feel quite underpowered because you don't have the nitrous and stuff. And like, you know, I went to do a few jumps. I just went off to start going around the world and thought, I'll get the story in a bit. And I went off to try and, like, jump through some billboards, but I couldn't get to them because I wasn't fast enough. Like, my starting car wasn't there. And I think that's kind of... The mistake for me is that Burnout Paradise, the game, was all about the fun. Like, just have fun in this world. We've created all these distractions, all these things to collect and do. Whereas that does exist in Need for Speed Heat, but they also kind of... They've got this story, and they want you to follow the story, and they want you to follow it. And it's very tutorial-y stuff. Like, the stuff I'm talking about, it does introduce you to the idea of, hey, you want to go and buy your nitrous? Oh, you can't, because you're not cool enough. So go and do some stuff in the night and earn rep, and then they'll allow you to buy the cool stuff that you've got from doing the stuff during the day. And I get it. I just wonder if there was a slightly more elegant way of revealing this.
Yeah.
I ended up finding I looked like a disused old stadium, and I was just minting around in there, like, you know, jumping through things. And I couldn't quite get through some of the billboards and, like, some of the jumps. I was like, yeah, I feel like I need a bit of a quicker car. And,
yeah,
and
I'm sure that stuff comes. I know what stadium you mean, yeah, because I did the same. But, I mean, there is a rhythm to it, but you're right. It kind of, there could have been a better way to introduce it. In the beginning,
like, I wonder if a day-night cycle would have been probably a bit more difficult to, but it would have kept, maybe in thematically the game would have flowed a bit more, like, you know, you've got X amount of time to go around in the day, a bit like, you know, in Minecraft, you know, you play through the day as much as you want, but then the nighttime comes and you can go in the night, but also you can just go to bed and get up in the morning. Yeah. Whereas this doesn't do that. It is you are playing in the day or the night and you're choosing which. I wonder if the day was a set, well, mind you, then people would get cross, they couldn't carry on. Look, well, you can do the billboards at night and stuff, can't you? You can do all that stuff too.
Yes, majority of it, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, I get a day and night cycle might have worked a bit better, but then maybe give you the option of going in like the Fallout equivalent, fast traveling, go back to the night. Yeah. I don't know, but yeah,
right.
I mean, obviously, I've praised it a bit, but there are like, as I said, the story's pretty naff, but also the game, I encountered quite a few technical issues, which were a shame. Like, and I only kind of encountered them later into it. So, I mean, I don't know how it would transition for everyone, whether it'd be whenever it would happen, whether it'd happen early on or not, but things that are quite affecting. So the night races are tough as it is, because in the day when you've got the directional prompts and you've got the yardage and how close you're going to approach them, that's at night as well, but the signs are a hell of a lot clearer in the day. Big yellow signs with big black arrows on, whereas at night they're kind of like blue neon with white arrows, so you're really having to pay attention. And I had a race where the arrow on them wasn't there, and I don't think it was like part of the course. It just wasn't
a bug.
Yeah, so I'm trying to guess, and yes, I can see the minimap, and yes, I can see kind of like how tight the corners might be, but that doesn't take into account any thing that's in the way, because like on some corners there are trees lining the sides of him, others there are like tires, so you know if you crash into a tire you're going to be fine, but if they're the thick, like big thick trees, you will just go straight into them, or if there's like a bridge going over one, you're going to crash into the pillars. So that was kind of annoying. And then a lot of the other races at night, they're the kind of, obviously you've got the lap outline on your mini map as well, so you kind of know where you're going because you're going through checkpoints, so you need to know where the next one is on your map as well as seeing it on the screen. And the actual line on the lap disappeared halfway, so, and it wasn't because I missed a checkpoint, it just disappeared, so I had no idea where I was going. And like the neon guides don't exist all around the lap, they kind of pop up where there's a checkpoint or where there's a corner, so that kind of threw me off a couple of times. And then the game kind of froze on me during a my night escapade. So all that rep I'd built up and all the heat levels that you get, because obviously the more times you evade the police, you get a heat multiplier, so it builds your rep even more. That all disappeared. I had to restart. So there have been a few technical issues which have hindered it, and it's a 30 frame per second game as well, which some people might not appreciate.
Yeah, I kind of want to play it on PC because I think it's 60 on there.
Yeah.
I'm not a snob about that sort of stuff. I played it on console and enjoyed it, but I'd like to play it at 60 because it does, like, you know, we had some footage at Gamescom of it and it looks gorgeous.
Yeah. It's very pretty. Very pretty.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially at night time. You know, the lights and the neon. It's just a very, very sexy game. Yeah, if a little lifeless. If there's not really much happening other than the course itself, which might not bother many people.
I suppose the difference, again, is like Forza Horizon 4, you're kind of getting XP for everything. Like if you go off a road and start smashing rocks to pieces by mistake, they even reward you for that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know.
But no, it's good. I like it.
I'd like to play more. I'd like to play more of it.
Yeah,
I don't know that I'll find time. I'd like to play more of it. I'll be honest with you, Chris, that's a segue, if ever there was one, into a games I don't want to play any more of.
Go on.
So, listen, this is going to be an interesting chat at Christmas time, because I get the feeling that this is going... I don't think there's any middle ground in this game. I think there are extremes of like people who are like, this is a masterpiece, and people who are like, this is garbage, get in the bin. I'm not in the middle. I think Death Stranding might be a bit rubbish. I've played about 10 hours, and similar discussion to last week, only it's me now, not you. I don't know where to start with it. Like, there's so many things this game does that I think are missteps, and it could have been more. Like, the elephant in the room is Kojima. It always is. And, like, this guy, I don't think he knows what the word subtle means anymore. I don't know if he ever knew what subtle meant, actually. I don't know.
Mm.
The naming conventions, like there was a point where one of the characters was introduced, and I honestly thought that this person's name was Bridget Bridges for a minute, and it wasn't. I laughed at it, but there was no point where I was like, "Wow, that's shocking." I just went with it because it's like, yeah, he would do that. He would do that, wouldn't he? That doesn't shock me. There are things that bug me, like the references to Metal Gear from a guy who supposedly is so happy to be. I mean, he constantly would say things like, you know, this is the last game, and the not the rumor so much as the story, the publicly accepted version of the tale appears to be that he was kind of kept there to keep and made to keep doing Metal Gears, not under like as a prisoner, but like if you want to make games, you're making these games. And yet the first thing he does when he goes away is like I think in the first 2-3 hours there's 3 Metal Gear references, and they're not subtle ones. Like one of them I mentioned to you off podcast, where, you know, I've always like the choir is almost him saying, how dare you have a go at me for choir. I saw the way I read it. The message of the social stuff is like, I get it, but I think it's you're battered over the head with it. Like the BT stuff, I think, is at the start, I will say, incredibly tense. I was like, oh, this is actually really good. The stealth part of this game is awesome. But you get something that you can combat them with, and they become an annoyance, man, to me. And I'll go through and you'll have played this mission. I don't know if you'll have done it the same, because it's obviously you finished the game. But one mission that was almost a breaking point for me, where I was like, I can't play this anymore. So there is a area where there's a bike outside. It's I think it's called a trike, actually. And it's not got any power, so you're obviously doing these quests where you're, and that seems to me the whole game, by the way, you're just putting packages on your back and going, or on your equipment and going from A to B, and that's the thing, you're connecting, you're taking packages and then using your Cupid USB magic stick that turns on the network. So this bike, it's very obvious from the start, you're going to get something that's going to allow you to power this bike up, and you do, you go somewhere and, you know, you go through all this mountainous area and you get it. You deliver your package and you get someone online and they say, hey, now you can build generators. So you've got to go back to the other place anyway. I built a generator outside and I got on my bike, charged it up. It's like, oh, this changes things. I can put stuff on my bike. I'm not yomping around constantly encumbered. It felt like, oh, this is a turning point. This is the point. I heard about him saying people hate the early part of the game, and this is it. This is the turning point. Now I've got a vehicle. Now I can move around. And I moved away, and straight away I'm through a mule area. It's like, well, I'm just going to get out of here. I've got a boost on this bike, which I don't think it actually told me. I just clicked the stick, and it's like, oh, there's a boost. Anyway, so I go to do a mission, and then it says, this is all fine. This is smooth. This is more fun. The bike isn't that quick, but it's quicker, and there's the balancing. We'll get to that. And you get to the point, and then you go off to another part that's like a really long way away, and I'm like, well, I'm taking my bike, because damn right, this is a long walk, and I've got enough, what are those packs called? P-somethings, where you can build, that let you build like the generators.
Oh, PPDs, yeah.
So you've got these things that allow you to build structures, essentially 3D printing off this chiral network stuff, and I built a generator on the way to charge my bike up. I'm like, yeah, I'm just taking my bike all the way here. And it tells you, don't ride through water too much, that uses more charge. It all makes sense, Chris. It all makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then I go through a BT area. I'm like, shit, this is a bit more sticky. And I was like, I had the ability to attack them. So I was like, well, do you know what? I'm going to get rid of one or two of them. And I got on my bike, and it's like they got in real close. But I was like, I'm on a bike. So I boosted away, and I actually escaped. And thought, okay. Then, and this is a long walk, it would be, and it's a long ride. I think it is like the end of chapter 2, this mission, or very close to. It's certainly the longest journey I'd been on. And then another BT encounter happened. And these don't feel random. I feel like they're scripted. It started raining both times, and it felt specific to where I was. The second one, it felt as though I was being deliberately funneled through a ravine or crevice below mountains. I couldn't go round them because they were just too high and too rocky. And I couldn't ride my bike through them because it honestly felt like Kojima himself had personally got the game open in whatever engine it's running in, the Horizon Zero Dawn one, and put a rock in every single space there to stop me riding the bike. Okay? And I was like, are you fucking seriously telling me, after all the effort of getting this bike here, after getting this bike charged, I have to get off and walk through this BT area? And I did, but it was still rocky and I stumbled over and then my cargo went everywhere and I couldn't escape. And I went into the, well, I don't know what it's called, but whatever that is when the BTs drag you under.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of easy. I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, oh, I could just dodge this thing and throw grenades at it. And this is easy. And so I defeated that, I don't know if you call it a boss, but that battle, went back. The rain had cleared because I defeated the BTs, I guess. I put the stuff back on my bike and I drove off. And I was like, is this the game now? Is this the game now? Like, am I now... Because it felt like I was told by Kojima, if you know what I mean, and the game so far had led me to believe that BT encounters are entirely optional. And then at the end of Chapter 2, I won't say what happens, but you are again kind of forced into something in a way of it's like, no, that this isn't... Because the best bit of this game for me is actually, bizarrely, the quiet, the just gently walking. It's a meditative game. It reminded me of Minecraft at times where you are just chilling out. Chilling out and walking along with stuff, and then a nice bit of music plays. And I think he's a bit up his own arse. I think he wants you to feel the way you did when you hit Mexico in Red Dead for the first time.
Yeah.
And I don't think it hits that personally. I think it does it too often. I don't hate it. I don't. But I don't want 55 hours of that, because... The BTs now have got to me for the point where I'm not actually frightened of them. And this is only 10 hours in. I'm like, oh, would you piss off? This is really annoying. Go away. I want to just deliver my cargo. I want to meet them. I want to see the next cutscene. I want to see if this story, see for myself, if this story goes anywhere. And it feels like he deliberately... You know how some... They call Hideo Kojima an auteur. You know, he's this auteur creator who does his own thing. Everyone said they wanted to see Kojima unfettered, you know, like no one's telling him what to do. I feel like he's now got a bit of David Cage syndrome, where I absolutely do like their work, but they actually need someone above them to say, hang on, is this stupid? You know, like with David Cage, does this make sense? I said it on the pod when it came out, like his last game, why does this seem like an exact copy of a scene from The Mighty Boosh? With Kojima, with this game, it's like, hang on, are you sure you want to take one of the mechanics most people hate in games, encumbrance, and build your game around it? Like, The Outer Worlds has encumbrance. It's a Fallout-style game. But they even know, because there's a perk in that game where you can unlock fast travel whenever you're over-encumbered, so you can just instantly travel back to your ship and unload. Like, that's a great perk to have. This game feels like the opposite of that, where it's like, no, You don't get to do that. This is an encumbrance game. You are managing all these meters. Like, I think when this hits PC, someone will make this into a really, really game I really enjoy by way of modding it. I think, you know, like you holding left and... That's the thing I'll ask you. I'm sorry to all our listeners. I'm just rabbiting. This is just me dumping my thoughts on Death Stranding. In the game, when you walk in, when you've got a lot on your back, and I think sometimes when you haven't, you can trip and stumble and you use left trigger and right trigger, so L2 and R2 to rebalance. But you can also hold them to kind of like grip the straps of your rucksack, and it kind of stops you from ever doing that. That's all I would do. The second I thought, oh, I've got a lot on my back, I would just hold the two R2 and L2 down all the time. Is that...
So it's sometimes, like when you're walking over a lot of rocky terrain, you can do that, but it'll still cause you to fall if you pass through a lot of it. So one of the main ways you would do that is if you run downhill, and if you run and grip, then brilliant, you're pretty much sorted. But if there's like a big rocky patch and you run through that, you'll still fall over. That's the whole, like, you know, when you press your Odradek and you can scan the environment. That's where like the red of them will be. So if you run like down a hill, it's probably more likely going to be green as opposed to blue as opposed to like red. But there'll be a period where you would run through and it would be red. And without scanning it and you don't know, you could still fall over.
Is this the Marmite game? Is this the game
I don't disagree
that you
with.
And I could chat for 10 hours about, but we're never going to... I'm not going to disagree. I can see the things you've said in your review, the things you've said on the podcast. I can see them. I'm just not feeling them. And I suspect you're the other side of that, that you understand where I'm coming from, perhaps. But
I don't disagree with anything you're saying.
Okay.
Right?
But it just affected you more.
But this is what makes it like an interesting discussion, because
yeah,
like if I wasn't reviewing and if it wasn't Kojima, and like I'm a huge fan of Metal Gear, so everyone knows, right? And that is one of the reasons why I was looking forward to play it, to see what he did next. I think if it was somebody else and I wasn't reviewing it, I would have given up before where you are, you know. That these things that frustrate you do not stop.
I don't want to say no one stop him, because you should be allowed to create the art you want to create. But I don't know, you just hear all these things about Konami made him do this, Konami with this, Konami with that. And I'm left sat here now wondering, is that definitely the story then? Because what I'm seeing here is a game that I think 99%, well, maybe that's a hype, but a lot of people, if they were his boss, would question elements of and say, I get what you're doing artistically. But also, does it say anything? That's the thing. And if it does say anything, if it delivers the message he's trying to make it deliver, does it say it over 55? Because I can't play 55 hours of this. I can. Of course, I physically can. I won't, because I want to, like, next week, or this week as you're hearing this, I want to play Star Wars Jedi Fallen... I've forgotten the name of that game. Fallen Order, isn't it?
Yeah.
I want to play that. I would actually quite like to play Need for Speed. I'd like to sit down and play A Hat in Time on Switch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I want to play more Outer Worlds. Do you know what? I wouldn't say no to playing Control again on PC. I liked it that much.
Hmm. And I think this game is for those who have got plenty of time to put it into it, because you can finish it on 55 hours, no problem. But
when
if you
say that's what do you mean you can? Like, you mean it took longer?
No, well, like, so.
Do you know what I mean? Is that minimum?
No, I think what I mean is, if you were to do all the side missions and the kind of main game, you're looking at around 50, anything from 50 to 65, I would say. But that's through not even bothering with a lot of like the building stuff. Like if you, because the kind of highway, the main highway that runs through the game, is separated by different structure points, and you can take a load of your materials to these structure points to build a tiny bit more of the highway. So if you really wanted to, you could harvest all the points or collect them from the ports and then build the motorway, which probably in itself would take hours, and then. That's not saying, like, you could build a bridge at every possible gap in your game that took you two to three times as long to walk around. You could build a bridge, but then that would take hours to get all those bridges put in place. So to build everything to make this game as easy as possible would take a hell of a lot longer than just persevering with it.
But let's talk about the social stuff, because I actually quite like that. I think that's quite cool. I enjoyed the idea of, like, there was one point where I forgot. So when you build a bridge, a literal, not a metaphorical bridge, an actual...
A tangible one.
Yeah, one you can actually drive over or walk over. The idea is you plop down like a sort of base for the bridge, but that's stage one. You have to then pour materials into it to create the sort of rest of it. And I actually forgot that, because I hadn't done it since the tutorial one. And I put one down thinking, oh, this, I've got a bike, I don't want to go through that. It was one of the late missions in chapter two or three or whatever. And I went across these rivers. I thought, I'm going to put a bridge here because I've got low battery and I don't know what... I don't know yet. Are BTs random? Are they scripted? Could there be mules around? So I started building the bridge, and then it didn't build it. I was like, oh, shit, yeah, no, you've got to then put the materials in, haven't you? I forgot that. And I was like, actually, this is all right, because someone else will probably come along and do this, and I've been helpful. And I think that stuff's super cool. The problem is, I don't think he actually even fully delivers on that, because then there's this timefall rain which erodes things. And although you can upgrade stuff to make them more resistant to them, the question that I've heard people ask, and I think actually on our YouTube channel this question was asked, was like, hang on, well, when I start the game, won't there be all this stuff? And we talked about this last week, and all this stuff only appears after you've unlocked like a, you know, a chiral industry sort of thing. The chiral network is like, after you've turned on the chiral network in that area, you'll be able to see these things. But there's still a case of, hang on, then I'll turn around and it'll just be the whole area's open for me. But that's not actually true, because these things erode, the timefall erodes them. And it seems like a bit of a MacGuffin, because it's like, you don't actually see that happen from what I can tell. It's just their way of making sure that each server isn't obscenely populated with 3 million bridges and 3 million, you know, ladders and climbing pegs. And mechanically, that makes sense, but I'm not sure it actually makes sense in the game universe. And on top... On top of that, I'm gonna say this. I straight up dislike some of the marketing, like the Monster Energy stuff, and the when Norman Reedus takes a shower and you see the advert for Norman Reedus' TV show. To me, are huge missteps that anyone would normally say, you don't put that in. Yeah, it's the sort of thing you put in as a funny joke developer side, but you actually, it never makes it to retail. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I also have to say, right, of all the characters I've seen in the game, and I've met Higgs, who, fuck me, he chews the scenery apart, that guy, in a very kind of I would expect him to way. All the characters I like, do you know, if I were to say the character I don't like, do you reckon you could guess it?
Die Hardman?
No.
Hartman?
I thought you'd get it straight away. No, I don't like Sam.
Do you not?
I think so. Do you remember with Metal Gear 5, the Kiefer Sutherland was Snake, wasn't he? Because there was all that hoo-ha about David Hayter not being.
Yeah.
And then it turned out that Snake's voice was hardly in the game. And I'm guessing he was too expensive and they didn't get him for long enough to record yeah. voice lines. I'm starting to wonder if the same shit is true of Norman Reedus, because everyone else has a lot to say and he just sort of goes, I sure did like... Like, you know those little incidental lines as he's walking around? Like, I sure do, I always did like the quiet. I've heard that three times and I'm surprised to hear that repeatedly. I feel like he doesn't say much. And
no, he doesn't.
He kind of is a sounding board, but at the same time, he's supposed to be the main character here, but then I don't know. Maybe he's not. Maybe you're the main character. I don't know.
He obviously, as the story progresses, his arc progresses, and he becomes more vocal. And obviously, because the game, it's about Sam. So
yeah,
I mean, it helps because like I still to this day watch The Walking Dead. Like, I've stuck with it.
Right.
So I'm very much a fan of Norman Reedus in that role. So I've kind of got a soft spot for him in this. So I think that helps. But
like, what happens, man, when... So that show that's... Sam, that Norman Reedus is in... Is it Ride it's called?
Yeah.
Have you seen it? Is that a good show?
I have no fucking clue what it is.
What about if that season ends? What about if that show ends? Will they patch that? Because they can't patch out the Monster Energy stuff, because that's so part of the game. Like, that to me is... That rubs me up the wrong way, man. It really rubs me up the wrong way.
Who's making it?
What? Who's,
in Death Stranding,
well, yeah,
what factory still makes Monster when the world's gone to shit?
Like, I will say they do start... Well, that is actually a fucking great point, Chris. Sorry. I've gone over that too quickly. But you're right. But what's her name? Fragile. I quite like Fragile's character. I think she's interesting. And she's always eating these... what are they called? Is it nanobites? Whatever they are. They're like floating worms. Carabites,
something like that. Yeah.
Floating worms. And in the stuff they showed, it shows that Sam eats them too, but it never explained why, because it was just like Kojima at the PlayStation thing in Japan showing it off. But in the game, she's just like eating them from day one, and then eventually when you hit Chapter 3, it does explain why, and you're like... Oh, okay, I get it. Because you can eat them too. It's like recovers your blood energy or your health or whatever the fuck it's supposed to be. It doesn't feel like a difficult game. It feels like a game about attrition. Like it's. I've always felt Kojima takes a piss a bit, and I feel like this is the ultimate of him, like saying, "Oh, you like me, do you? Go on then, finish this. Go on. Oh, you thought you were going to be able to walk across unencumbered? No. Oh no, now." Even the grenade throwing, the aiming, feels like I am constantly having to aim high.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, to the point where I can hardly see the enemy on the screen. It doesn't feel like a great action game. It feels like it could be a good walking sim. weighed down by a billion mechanics. And I'm afraid that I just... Again, I don't... I suppose this is as close to... I said Marmite. I don't hate it, but I definitely don't love it. And I'm leaning towards more like, I don't think I want to play any more of this game. And I think the thing it's missing, and I understand why it's missing that, is that in games like this, think about like an Assassin's Creed, right? Which is this epic 70-hour game where you're in, you know, Egypt or wherever you are. I forget. I can't even remember where the last one was.
Greece?
It might have been. Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, Odyssey. But
every time you do something, the numbers go up, right? This doesn't do that. You do unlock things, but every time you complete something, there is no tangible reward. Now, that may be the ultimate comment from Kojima that, people who don't play it, you just want to see the numbers go up. Games have changed. You know, games have changed, and people want rewards beyond the next cutscene. And I feel like I'm doing all these journeys, but I'm not actually gaining an awful lot for it.
I think that mentality is spot on in today's day and age. However, there are those out there that do want the next cutscene, and when it does get like to a point where things start to unravel,
yeah,
and especially, no spoilers, but the first real appearance of Mads, like from then.
Yeah,
it's
see,
like,
I've not had that. I've not had that at all.
From then, it's like, oh my god! Like,
so without spoiling, how many more hours do I need to play to get that?
Not that many, because obviously there are chapters, aren't they? So one of the chapters is named around.
I'm on Fragile, and I've heard that one's a very long chapter.
And it's the fact that what it does in that chapter as well. It's not just the cutscenes, it's the level itself is just completely off.
You're doing it, Chris. You're making me want to play it again.
Because there are, like, later on, like I said last week to you, that when I was playing it, I'm just like, fuck, will this just end? I've done so much now. But then he fucking finds a way to completely flip it on its head and make me care so much about it. And there will be things I will talk about in our pod at the end of the year that I will fight for in terms of
I kind of want to watch the, like, someone put together a supercut of 8 hours of cutscenes. I kind of want to watch that.
There's some cutscenes which just rip you apart, and then the level, the missions you have to play during them. And it's just, this is why... These are the things that I love about his work, is the story. And yes,
so why does it take so long to get there?
I don't know. I don't know.
The fact he was out ahead of the game saying some people will hate the first half of my game, and I'm seeing that going, that's an interesting marketing technique right there, isn't it?
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. We will definitely be talking more about Death Stranding. Adam will probably be... In fact, I think he bought the collector's edition.
He has, yeah.
So, which I nearly did, and I'm sort of glad I didn't now. Yeah. We'll come back to Death Stranding. Like, we don't want to turn into the Death Stranding podcast, but I couldn't talk about it last week, so I hadn't played it. Chris had, and Adam will be back next week. I mean, if Adam was here, this probably would be an hour and a half of Death Stranding discussion.
To be fair, we did about 7 podcasts on Horizon Zero Dawn, so...
Yeah. Which, yeah. Like... I hope Sony get back into doing though. I will say Death Stranding is interesting. I will give it that. I will give it that it is a discussion stimulator. I will give it a lot, but I don't think I can give it any more of my time. Like, I want to finish the Outer Worlds, man. I love that game. I'm loving that game.
Yeah, I need to put more time.
I really want to play that game more. And Pokemon's out next week or week after or whatever it is, but Pokemon's out.
Shenmue 3.
Shenmue 3 is another one that will be interesting because the previews seem to suggest that game's all right, but hasn't kept up with the times.
Nah, no, you know? No chance, yeah.
But then maybe if it's... We'll see. We can't talk about a game we haven't played yet.
Yep.
Let's get into some listener correspondence. The first question. What's better, Chris? Buying loads of grain... Well, I'm going to ask you first. Do you know what FOMO is? Because so that's one word I had to keep Googling because I kept forgetting what it means.
I do know what this is.
Okay, so I'll tell you what.
Fear of missing...
There you go. No, I was going to ask you to do it. Yep. Fear of so what's out. What's better? Buying loads of games in a fear of missing out fashion as an adult that you play a little of, or really rinsing a game exploring every nook and cranny while you build your pocket money as a kid, waiting patiently on your next birthday?
If I wasn't working for God is a Geek, I would probably rinse a game. I'm very impulsive as a person, like, and I get very like obsessive about certain things. So when a game's coming out, I'd used to just kind of get them all and play very little of them. But as I got older, I was very much keen on getting a game and just playing it to death. Like, prime example was Fallout 3. That was kind of one of the main games that I lived in, and I did everything, and I loved just going on for a few more hours and adding to the hundreds of hours I'd already put in. So I think now I would just buy a game, spend all my time with it, move on. I reckon, yeah.
I have a terrible... I don't know if I would say I'm impulsive, but I have a terrible... Give me the next game, give me the next game, give me the next game. Like, I consume... the almost sometimes the idea of playing them is more exciting than the actual... You know, yes. I want the next one, I want the next one. And that's probably a symptom of being in the industry, partially in the industry, whatever you want to call us. But, like, when a game hits me, the more recent ones I can think of... you just mentioned Horizon Zero Dawn, platinumed it. Bloodborne, platinumed it. God of War, platinumed it. When a game hits me that point where it's like, I absolutely love this game, there's no feeling like that. I would trade 10 new games for a game. There was a period where I was not falling out of love, but nothing was kind of clicking with me. And I forget the game that did it. It was around about South Park, the more recent one. I just really desperately wanted that RPG or that feeling like I used to have. And I got it. I can't remember where from. I'll be honest, Nintendo often get it out of me. Like when a Mario game or, you know, like Mario Odyssey was just... And I've talked about it before. Like when I reviewed Super Mario 3D World, it was around Christmas time. And that just felt... It felt almost illegal. Like, I'm playing a Nintendo game before it came out. And I couldn't. I just consumed it. Yeah, and it consumed me. Like, every moment was like, can I just play more of this game? Can I play more of this game? And that's my favourite feeling when a game does that to you. And I'm hoping, because all the signs point to it being this kind of game, I'm hoping Star Wars is that. Because when you look at what the games it's kind of aping, the kind of Metroid, the Soulsy combat, and the Star Warsness, I'm hoping that's going to be one of those I platinum. Do you know what I mean? One of those ones where I just... And I know you.
I think if it's any indication of what Respawn are capable of, then exactly that will very much be a thing that we will both become consumed with. And I really want it to be.
I mean, what I miss is a game like that doing it to me, but one that's a multiplayer. Like, I thought Apex Legends would do that to me, but I just didn't have time. And I see people playing it and clips appearing online. And I'm like, oh God, that looks good, doesn't it? I could play that right now and it costs nothing. I could... next one, next game, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Next question. What's the worst faux pas you've ever made on the pod? Chris's Peggers one was pretty special. Well, I don't think I've ever made one on the pod. You made one the week before that, which I can't actually...
Was
it the week before? I can't say it. The thing is, it wasn't actually that bad. It was just a tired slip of the tongue that was made to sound worse because we drew attention to it. So we don't tend to cut much from the podcast. It really wasn't that bad. It was just a sort of bit of slang, I suppose, that you don't hear as much these days, that you didn't even mean to say. It just came out in mid-conversation.
It happens a lot. I don't mean to, but it happens a lot.
No.
But yeah, I think... Generally, we're pretty good.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I genuinely can't think of one. I'm sure someone has listened to all 371 podcasts, and that's just the numbered one. There's been other ones. There's probably over 400 podcasts with my voice on it that, there's bound to be something. Yeah, I don't know. How do you get the most out of your weekends, Chris? I always seem to waste them, he says. This is Thomas at LlamaFluff42. Most Mondays I reflect that all I really achieved was eating slightly more cheesy snacks than usual. This is an interesting one, I think, for both of us, because I work, I get one Saturday off a month. So, and Sundays are usually dedicated to kids' football because I coach youth football for a local club.
I mean, I don't. What's a weekend? I don't have weekends. Yeah. I work shift work, so I'll work Saturdays, Sundays every week. Sometimes I'll have a day off.
I think we can rephrase this as how do you get the most out of your time off? And unfortunately, I am someone who tends to procrastinate an awful lot if I'm not working or spend time working on the computer. And then at 9 o'clock at night when I've got to get ready for the work day tomorrow, I think, shit, I have just wasted a day off. And I'm kind of angry with myself. And then I talk myself back out of it. No, I didn't waste it because I enjoyed it. Because I do this, like, for example, this podcast because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I do tend to spend a lot of time sitting. It's the old looking at the shelf with 300 games on it and then not playing a single one thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I tend to do. I'm pretty generic when it comes to days off. I just I enjoy spending time with my kids and my wife and not have to worry about going to work. The thing is, I don't know about you, but when I've got time with my other half, I very rarely just want to sit down and just watch crap on the telly. Like I have to find a series that we're currently watching or we want to watch and sit down and watch it. I don't want to feel like I'm wasting my time watching just shit, which I guess no time is wasted when you're with one you love.
No, but we tend to go from show to show. Like, we'll find a show and then consume.
This is a struggle, isn't it? Do you have a problem? Do you struggle? Like, what should we watch? Well, let's look on Netflix. And an hour later, you've not found anything. Or let's try Amazon Prime. Oh, nothing.
I tend to never look on Amazon Prime because I never find anything I want on there. Netflix is my go-to. This is probably going to be boring, but I'll go for it. We've got 10 minutes to spare. We tend to, like, Claire and I have got, There's like a middle ground, which is something we both like. There's when there's football on in the evenings or the weekend, I tend to watch that. And Claire will watch stuff like Bake Off and, you know, similar programmes like that. She likes watching stuff about properties being done up. And I will sit and watch them and find them fascinating. Sometimes I find them annoying, but sometimes I don't. And I bet she definitely finds the football annoying. What we tend to do is we both have a massive love of comedy. So have you ever seen Taskmaster?
No. I've been told by my mates telling me about it, and it sounds amazing.
Well, I should say Taskmaster. Sorry, that would probably be. I really enjoy that show, but then I absolutely adore Greg Davies because he is
he's incredible.
The reborn Rick Mayall, almost. Mm. You know? Greg Davies is just genuinely brilliant and funny, and he's the host-ish of it. Alex Horn's very funny, and they've got a good dynamic on that show. And it's just silly, and I like silly. So we tend to go through that. I've just recently discovered Big Mouth, which is really funny and incredibly rude. Like, as a man who's nearly 40, I sometimes forget you can say the C word on TV. Well, not TV, Netflix, you know what I mean. I sometimes forget that stuff. So to hear that, it's like, ooh, blimey. You know, so we tend to have three or four shows. Like, we were watching Disenchantment, which I don't remember if we finished or not. Maybe need to finish that new series. You know, stuff like that. We're both big kids at heart, and we like animated stuff and funny stuff. So, yeah, that's what I tend to, if we sit down of an evening and I've got a good bit of time to spare, I tend to do that.
I'll tell you what, I don't want to go off topic here, but
no, go for it.
Kind of related. I've finished Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening over the last 3 weeks with my wife.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So my wife doesn't game. She doesn't play. The only games we play together, everybody's golf, because she absolutely adores it. And we've put, like, I'm not kidding, at least 300 hours into that since it came out. We're very limited for what we play. But I got it. And she started to watch me. She was like my wingman throughout the whole of the game. Like, she was on Google, because God knows how you're supposed to find some of these things without, like, it's mental. Like, the path to how to trade in or where to find someone to talk to.
That's what I said
to
in the review. They want it. Like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
definitely some stuff here that I don't know how. I don't really remember how I found it as a kid, but I did.
Yeah, exactly. But, like,
Nintendo Hotline, probably.
When we get a game that we both like Life is Strange and The Walking Dead, like Telltale stuff, she loves all that. So it's always good when I've got an actual, like, especially a Nintendo game where she sits down with me and play it. That we enjoy that as well. But yeah, there you go.
Okay. Thomas also asks, name one thing you see on TV shows that you really want to do. I want to do a dramatic handbrake turn. I misread that. Roll over the bonnet in a stylish fashion and catch some bad guys, of course. The reality would be breaking neatly and tripping awkwardly. But there you go. What do you see on TV that you'd love to do?
I don't know, really.
I mean, I can answer because it's simple and pathetic. I have a job that is tremendously physically demanding, and it's making my body age rapidly. And I wish I could play football like I used to, because although I was never going to be David Beckham or, well, someone more modern that people would know, I really did have two good feet and I could place the ball really well. And I, for a big lad, I was quite fit, and I don't feel fit anymore. I feel a bit broken. And so I watch the football and I think, you know, I see them now and they're like, oh, yeah, well, he is getting on a bit for a footballer. He's 34. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I'm much older than that. It's
kind of, yeah, it's quite weird you say that, because like, I got in from work last night and like, I'm a big basketball fan, so the Boston Celtics were playing, so I watched their match, and I was just thinking, like, I'd love to get back into it, but obviously I need to get a lot fitter. But then, like, yeah, who would want a 35-year-old?
There are teams for that. There are actually teams for that. A friend of mine plays for a local basketball team, and it is aimed at people who are that kind of age and want to do it. So you should look around, mate. There'd probably be people exactly like you. Yeah, and it's the same for football, but you still need to be fitter than I am to be able to... I should be playing fucking granddad's walking football. I could get away with that. Well, that's just not a bad idea. I'd be the best one on the pitch.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. That's not even a guarantee at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, sports. I miss playing sports.
I
did a lot.
Like I, you know, even when I was say 5, 10 years younger, we used to still go out and get a football, go to the local fields and kick around. Come home, think, God, we should have come home 2 hours earlier. We're gonna die.
Yeah.
But yeah, sports. But luckily,
like, I mean, you've got kids that love football and play.
Yeah, that's
football.
How I got,
like,
back into it. Yeah,
I've like my eldest, when she started a new school a year and a half ago, she joined the football team. And, like, she's been playing football for ages. And, like, we'd before she played football in this team, she'd go and play at the park. And she would be just like every other child that's never really played it before. Whereas after, like, she's been training and stuff, I went during the summer to play again with her. And it's, like, amazing how much she's improved. So, like, she's proper into football. So I've got all that.
How old is she, Chris?
She's 10 now.
Yeah, that's not a bad age to start. I mean, you ideally want them starting about 8-ish, 7,
yeah,
8.
Yeah, I mean, she was just turned 9 when she started playing at school, and now she had a 10th birthday week and a half ago. So she's proper into it now, and she's going to all the stuff. So, yeah,
that's
I'm really
awesome.
Chuffed about that.
You know, I won't go into it. I got very into, you know, youth football to the point where I'm involved with teams now. This could be a whole podcast. There's so much wrong with the youth aspect of football in this game. And the more I get into it, the more I realise exactly why why the England team is never, you know, exploding. Because there are deep-rooted problems with the youth side of this country's football. Anyway, on that miserably happy note, Dale at Sir Delboy asks, with Edge magazine, I haven't seen this, apologies, but with Edge magazine posting their list of the most defining games of the last decade in the latest issue, what would the team pick? Now, I don't think we can answer this because we do Game of the Generation stuff. So I will say this, I didn't talk about it earlier, right? Something else I've been playing, just because it's kind of going over old ground, but I've been playing Red Dead Redemption 2 on PC. Every time I start playing that game again, I'm absolutely floored by it. That game is absolutely incredible. Like, unbelievable. It's just, it looks amazing on PC, and like the 60 frame stuff is so weird. It almost looks weird. But that game is meticulously designed. It's so damn good. I think that would be in mine, actually. If I pick one game, I'll only pick one for now because I don't want to ruin what we would do. But Chris, can you think of one? I mean, I can think of two more, but you're bound to say one of them.
I can absolutely think of one other, which it is along the same lines, but GTA 5.
Interesting. So
that game to me, absolutely. Like that world and the way they kept building it online, it's phenomenal. But I mean, the story alone and the time I spent with that game, I adored it. Every aspect of that game is perfect to me. That world is fantastic. The missions are fantastic. The characters are fantastic. Everything about it. As you say, there are others which we'll talk about loads, but like God of War will be another for me in terms of narrative, the satisfaction in combat. It's just fine tuned to perfection, that game. So yeah, I'd say probably off the top of my head, God of War and GTA 5.
There are two or three others I could mention. I have mentioned two of them three of them, actually, on this podcast. And that's all I'm going to say. That is a podcast for this week. What have we got coming up next week, Chris? Can you think of anything interesting games-wise that we've got? I mean, let's say Pokemon. It sounds like the review code situation. That's a bit dodgy. I've seen some stuff on Twitter that suggests the leaks have harmed that.
It'll be the release date for Star Wars, won't it?
Yes.
15th?
So the EA Access thing will be there, and we'll be covering that anyway. Google Absolutely. Stadia's not far off, man.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, cool. You'd think that, like, Death Stranding would be like the end of the year, but there is still quite a lot coming.
Well, just before we go, we've got Star Wars, we've got Sniper Ghost Warrior, which I'm looking forward to reading thoughts on. That looks quite cool. We've got Pokemon Sword and Shield, we've got Google Stadia, Shenmue 3, Darksiders Genesis, and Terminator, the name of which I've forgotten the name of that game. Terminator something. Resistance. Terminator Resistance. All of those games could be quite cool.
Yeah. I mean, it looks very pretty.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to play, but like the visuals are amazing so far.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. But on that note, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your support. We always really appreciate it. We try very hard. We hope we deliver an entertaining podcast and entertaining content on godisageek.com. If you want to see some of that content early, you can go to patreon.com/godisageek, where for $1 a month you get early access to the podcast and other videos. Haven't been so good at doing the videos recently, but we'll get back to that. That's on me. I apologise. Some of them have come in very hot indeed, but we want to get them out there as well. Chris, thank you ever so much for your time.
No worries, thank you.
It's been a less jocular podcast. That's because Adam Carroll's not here with his food bollocks. But yeah, we'll speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye for now.